welcome to the CBS and Days edition of Daytime Confidential, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're going to be discussing Brandon Beamer joining Bold and the Beautiful, Michael Damian returning to Young and the Restless, Joe Mescalo allegedly fired, and much, much more, so stay tuned. Jay, Mike, welcome.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, there's been a lot up. We recently did an interview with Brandon Beamer, formerly of Days of Our Lives, and at that time, he basically said that there wasn't anything set in stone, but now it has come out in the last week that he has signed with Bold and the Beautiful. Reportedly, it is as a new character, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong. There's been some other casting as well. There's been, I believe, a gentleman by the name of Texas Battle who has joined the cast as Donna's illegitimate African-American son. What do you guys think of what's going on at Bold and the Beautiful? Jay? Mike?
I couldn't be happier for Brendan. I definitely have been pulling for that. I've been saying it from day one that he should go to Bold and the Beautiful. He just has that look and sensibility about him that I really think he'll do great stuff there. Glad to see him go. I mean, end up on that soap, and I'm looking forward to whatever Brad Bell has planned for him. Bold and Beautiful is one of the few soaps on right now that I can trust to entertain me, so I wanted him as Thomas Forrester, but it's going to be a new character, looks like, so just really happy for the guy. He's a great person, seems like, from what we know of him, and wish him the best.
Mike, what do you think?
I think it's great, too. I mean, he really came into his own when he was on Days, and I look forward to him being on The Bold and the Beautiful. I was wondering, I know Jay had been talking about him being the next Thomas Forrester, but I'm kind of glad they're bringing in a fresh character. Just because of the obvious Logan Forrester blending is just a bit much, so I think it'll be kind of refreshing to have a different person altogether, not related to anybody.
And they're bringing in this new Steffi, Canadian actress Jacqueline McGinnis Wood. 5 will get to 10, his new character is going to cross paths with her. So I guess it's a good thing that he's not a Forrester. Not that it's ever stopped him before, because plenty of Forresters have hooked up with other Forresters or non-Forresters in the past, but... I bet there'll be some chemistry testing there.
Mike, wasn't it you who suggesting on the blog that it would be a great idea if he ended up being a cabana boy for Steph?
Oh, yeah, Steph could definitely use a cabana boy. Well, she's kind of mellowed out somewhat. She's really taken a back seat to a lot of stuff. Now, unless she has some big grand plan that she's being nice for no reason or for a good reason, she's really taken a back seat to a lot of stuff that's been going on in the last couple months.
Well, and I wanted to ask,
have you noticed that too?
I have noticed that, and I've also noticed that at that same time, Bold and the Beautiful's ratings have been down, and it seems to me that there might be an argument for a correlation between the fact that Bold and the Beautiful's ratings being down and the fact that they're not using Susan Flannery's character to go in and do some major ball busting, because I think a lot of people, whether or not the show wants to admit it, watch specifically to see Steph take names and bust some balls. The stuff has been great that's been going on, but the ratings are going down. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's interesting too, because I feel that Pamela has taken over the role of taking down Donna, and even Steph has been trying to get her sister to kind of back off a little bit. I thought it would be kind of fun if they kind of teamed up and tried to derail Eric's marriage, but she's wants to walk away from the house. It sounds like she wants to walk away from Eric and everybody else, and I don't know. She's just being way too calm, and it's not like her at all. And I think that, you know, the other obvious thing is that Brooke's character has become very central to almost everything that's going on. So, like you guys had mentioned before, that there's kind of this handing off of the matriarch, I guess, for lack of a better word. So, who knows, you know, if her intention is to to leave, to retire.
Jay, do you think it's possible that Stephanie might be plotting and that that might be the reason why Texas Battle's character shows up as Donna's illegitimate son?
Well, I won't even act like I'm the great Kreskin here. Yeah, that's what spoilers indicate, that Stephanie has a hand in bringing Donna's illegitimate son to town next week. They're really going for a politically incorrect, but in my opinion, humorous way of bringing him on. He's going to be at the wedding, and Donna is going to mistake him as one of the help. And then, it of course, will be revealed that this was a kid that she gave up for adoption when she was 16 years old. I am glad to see Bold and the Beautiful bringing on someone of color. This has been a show that is really, as diverse as L.A. is, it's been a long time since they've really had anyone other than just white characters. I mean, they did bring on the cops, but they really never meshed well with the fabric. And, they've tried in the past. Lark Voris was on the show. But I'm glad that this is someone central. He'll be a Logan, so there'll be something to tie him to the cement of the show. It's interesting. There's also a Black Forester out there. The daughter that just comes home for weddings and funerals. Kristen's son is black, so who knows? Maybe he'll pop up someday.
I want to have us take the jump to Guiding Light, because when the new production model first came out, needless to say, I would say that we were less than complimentary on the new format, just because of the fact that they had some very major issues, or some big issues, with the audio problems, the fact that the cameras were too close together, and that there was a lot of shaking going on. And in the last week or so, I've started to see a little bit of improvement. There's still stuff that has to go on, but there's been a little bit of improvement in terms of audio quality. The cameras are getting a little bit steadier, and the shots aren't quite as close up, and they're definitely not as close up. I mean, it used to be where you could literally see every single pore on every single person's face and pretty much count or play hopscotch depending on the people's pores. And so now it's backing up a little bit. Any thoughts on how this is improving, or have you guys even noticed it?
Well, I'm sorry. Guiding Light is still a chore to watch for me. I mean, God, I hate to, I tried my whole be positive campaign, but it's just still a chore to watch this show for me. And having, Beverly McKenzie having passed this week and having been on YouTube and seeing all those great scenes of Guiding Light, at the country club where Alex blasted Roger, there wasn't an elaborate set there. That didn't look like it costed a whole lot of money, but it was great drama. It was glamorous. It was entertaining. Okay, I'll try to go back to the present day. I'm liking seeing Josh mix it up with Harley, but I think that with the development that Cyrus is now going to be taking over that case, that's going to kind of falter. But I just don't like this wholesome, homespun Andy Griffith version of Springfield. That's not the show I got hooked on in 92, 93. It was glamorous and lush and I don't know. I don't want to tune in and let love save the world. I want glamour and excitement, and it just... Blew. It just bites. I'm sorry.
They have made it a bit impossible to try and do any form of real type of action or high intensity stuff, because with it being set in real life.
I mean, these are the, not even just that, but okay, the Spauldings and the Marlers and the, Dinah, the Spauldings and the Chamberlains are these wealthy, fabulous families. Even the Lewises are wealthy. And it just comes across as really poor middle class people, and that's not the vision that this soap, I don't think, in the last 20 years has been trying to portray. I don't understand this. This is where when people come in with their own vision, it's like, that's great, write that on the side and put it on YouTube, but this isn't Guiding Light. turn it back into Guiding Light, and viewers might come back.
Well, do you think it's possible that if they were to take and maybe instead of having everybody stay at a podunk hotel, they tried the entire family living under one roof or one mansion format, that it might actually work better?
Hey, I love shows where all the rich people live in one house and share a bathroom. I mean, look at Dallas and, you know, Santa Barbara. We suspend disbelief for that. You know, I mean, me and my aunts used to laugh at, you know, all the Ewings living at South Fork. You know, it's like, come on. But that still made for great drama because you had scenes like around the dinner table and in the living room. And even the Spaldings had that, too, for so many years. I mean, they have so much great talent there that they could utilize. Maureen Garrett, Liz Kiefer, these are still people that are very popular with Guiding Light fans, but they just, I don't think there's I don't think that there is a rhyme or reason or a skeleton with this show right now. I think it's just haphazard, and that theme song sucks. All those indie music montages suck every 5 minutes. I mean, God, we do not need to see Harley set to music like a bad 90s emo video every 5 minutes.
Well, and what do you guys think? What's your guys' take on Harley and her struggle with her bills? Because I know Jay mentioned it earlier in terms of these being glamorous families, but Mike, before the podcast, you were saying how it was driving you nuts that we were having to watch her deal with this stuff. What are your thoughts on the state of Harley and where she's at?
I get the gist of the fact that she's struggling. She's a cop in a small town. I guess now it's a small town. That she's going to be struggling. She has kids. However, I don't need to see her a couple times a week sitting there with her bills spread out and a calculator. I get it. And it's not really drama to see her do that. It's not part of a story. There is no story. These characters are kind of roaming around aimlessly having conversations. And you said that the production value is getting better. And if that's the case, then it's really highlighting the other things that are wrong. And I think that these characters need to find some focus. I mean, there is just nothing going on. So, yeah, I do. And Jamie also has a point that he brought up, which, Jamie, about Harley and her children.
Well, here's my other thing on that. Unless it's been explained and I didn't catch that episode, doesn't Harley own a block of stock in Spalding Enterprises? I know that Spalding has been hit by the feds recently, but she's been having these money problems now for quite some time. And even though it's been seized, come on, isn't she getting her dividends? She's got Philip Spalding's child. Doesn't she have any trust fund for him or the other kids by Rick Bauer? Is Rick not paying his child support? Do they need to go on Judge Judy so that she can get some of her back pay? I mean, why is Harley struggling? She's got children by half the town. You know, she should be racking in child support.
Well, and that, I think, goes to your earlier point. It's like they've taken all the glamour out of the show, and, yeah, we see a few things about the fact that supposedly Spalding Mansion is basically now just a blip or a mention. We don't see any of that. And then you see everybody in little tiny offices, and it's a matter of no one associates anybody in that town with having money anymore. There was a great
Procter & Gamble has got to – oh, no. What I was going to say is Procter & Gamble has got to get up off the stick and invest some money in this soap. When Gloria Monty saved GH, she spent money to make it look more like primetime. You can't not spend money to make a soap watchable. It's ridiculous. They're spending money on all their slumping brands. Every week there's a press release coming out about how Procter & Gamble is spending more money to advertise their detergents or to start a new hip-hop record label with Tag body spray, but they won't spend any money on Guiding Light. If they want this soap to do better, they need to invest in it or just cancel it.
Well,
I mean, I would rather see it go off in some semblance of decency than to just see it become something that my little sister films with her YouTube
Well, camera. And speaking of YouTube...
I mean, and YouTube is doing better, like, yeah.
Well, because ahead, before the podcast, you were comparing the fact that you have this new handheld filming style to the fact that Imaginary Bitches premiered, which is the Eden Regal online web television show, and that show is really well produced. It looks like... It literally looks like Sex and the City on the web for the new generation.
And that was a group of friends with no budget. She said that it literally cost them $200
exactly
to do it because they're all professionals, and it looks great. You can't – no jerky – I mean, they're paying people at Guiding Light for that. They don't even know how to move the vase out of the way so that we can see the actor's face in the shot.
Well, and the,
I mean, it's ridiculous.
And in addition to that, but I mean, in Guiding Light's defense, though, they are producing 5-minute episodes on Imaginary Bitches. Guiding Light is producing a 60-minute episode, 350 some
budget.
Well, true, but I'm just saying it takes a lot more. It's really easy to take and make really great looking 5-minute clips as opposed to 60-minute
clips. You know
what?
If I was Gina Tognoni, I would move the vase my damn self because I would look over there and see that boy, or whoever that is, with that camera, and I'd say, "Can you see my face?" Or if it's not that, it's all up in their nostrils, you know. No, I'm sorry. I cannot. I tried. I cannot defend this show anymore. Something needs to be done. They need to send in the rescue team for Guiding Light if it's going to make it. I'm sorry, Barbara Bloom. She told us to be patient, but I'm sorry. This is not the show that helped me get over Santa Barbara dying in 93. This show I would not watch if it wasn't for this podcast. I would not watch this mess. I would watch Jerry Springer. It's painful to watch, and the music doesn't help.
Well,
Josh and Reva being apart doesn't help. Every other major couple that's still interesting being on there apart doesn't help. They're giving us nothing to invest
And I've
in.
Maintained for a while that the music score on the show could be drastically improved if they would just go back to be using more da-da-da-dum type scores like classic soaps.
Or instrumental.
Yeah
like if you listen to As the World Turns, they have classical, you know, violin kind of music very quietly playing in the background. It really sets the mood for the conversation. It doesn't overpower it. But, you know, you have Cassie wandering around doing stuff she should have done after Tammy died. It's been a long time, and I'm not saying she should ever get over it, but what she's her actions now do not justify what she's doing
and
right now.
I was
Olivia
gonna say, let's talk about
Olivia feeling sorry for herself. You know, I mean, this is all wasted time, wasted characters. There is just nothing to hook
Crystal
me
Chappelle
into wanting
is one
to
of
watch
the
a show.
Best actresses. Crystal Chappelle is one of the best actresses of her generation. God, I know she is like on the phone with her agent, going, "When is this over so I can get to a soap that will give me something to do?" I mean, okay, we've got the makeshift sets. Write something for these people. Write something worthwhile for them to do. I mean,
and even
there's
and
nothing
even
like
Ray,
I said.
If
the
you
story
liked
was
better,
great,
but
I think he's a good actor, but the storyline just totally
well, the thing
bites.
Is,
I mean, he hates
right, I can't
us.
Buy it. He rejects. Yes, he did. Yeah, I was going to say that. That's exactly right. He hated Gus all that time, and now
Gus,
he's dead. He's all about Gus.
Yeah. I'd love to see him on a show like GH that would write well for, you know, a character like that, maybe. I know people dog GH. But, I mean, I'd like to see him on a GH or a One Life to Live that knows how to write for the young urban kid or, you know, anyway, I think he'd do good. I think he's a really good actor, and that's what I was bringing out. And I think the woman who plays his mother is an okay actress. I think the thing of it is that they just inserted them into Gus and Harley's orbit for no reason. So it wouldn't matter if, like Nelson's been using, if it was Meryl Streep coming in to break up Gus and Harley for no reason, it's going to be hard to compliment.
Well, so then this
but,
is...
And I think that's a lot of what
so
happened.
This is then my question. If we're going to try, I mean, obviously... We don't have any influence at Guiding Light. We just voice our opinions about what we're seeing on our television shows. But if we were taking and playing executive producer for this show, how would you turn around the stories as quickly as possible? I'll go for Jay and then Mike.
Wow, you put me on the spot there. Okay, if I was to turn these stories around as quickly as possible, I would have Lillian Raines have a relapse of her, or have a breast cancer scare that bonded her with Reva and really told a powerful breast cancer storyline that brought her, Reva and Josh somehow back in the same orbit because they're trying to support her. I would basically, and that's just, that came off the top of my head, but I would go to the history of the show. I'd get rid of the whole Reva's movie mess. I would bring back Reva and Josh's kids with some kind of storyline that connects them. I would put Liz Kiefer back on contract as Blake and let her be the new Roger Thorpe of the town. I'd bring Maureen Garrett back out of retirement or whatever they've done to her and have Holly there maybe investigating what's going on with Spalding as the reporter. I'd put, you know, Maeve Kincaid back front and center with Gina Tognoni and Daniel Cosgrove in front center storylines in a triangle with Matt and Billy, because Billy and Vanessa were a great super couple for that show and they are still on the show. You know, I would cut my losses with Cassie and have her go to San Cristobal after she's found out as being a cheater and a whore. And then I would put Josh, Reva, and Jeffrey in a triangle that ends up with Reva back with Josh, and don't break them up anymore. And they are now the matriarch and patriarch of the show, and you bring on Mara and Shane and, you know, Jonathan whenever Tom Pelfrey can come back, and rebuild a new generation of this show with Josh and Reva as not the couple that's still making up and breaking up in their 50s, but as the core couple. You know, Mac and Rachel broke up 1,000 times on Another World, but by the last time they were together, you know, it's about, by the time a couple hits 50, stop the making up and breaking up, put them back together, rebuild their family like Another World did with the Coreys in the 80s. They aged all the three Corey kids, and they had new storylines for them, and they had Rachel doing more mature storylines, which is what they should do with Kim Zimmer and Maeve Kincaid. But it should be tied to their children.
Okay. Mike,
okay.
What are your thoughts to repair? If okay, I'm going to even put more of a timeline on this. If you could turn Guiding Light around in 6 months, what would you do?
Well, I agree with Jay. I would refocus on the history and the strength. There are things that are already there. The building blocks are there. A big part of it, and he was talking about children, Blake is Roger Thorpe's daughter, and there's no reason why she can't act like it. She also has twin sons who are, I would imagine, teenagers by now, who are, one could be good, one could be bad. You've got Maureen, who they talk about all the time, who is a throwback to the original character. And I just think Dinah and her mother, Vanessa, pairing up together and trying to bring Spalding back into the fold, there's just a lot there. And it doesn't have to be all about Reva, but I do understand the Bowers, I guess, at this point, it's not even a conversation to even think they could come back. But maybe you could center the family around Reva and Josh, because they have been on, and they are a constant. They are a favorite. And it's not uncommon. Well, soaps have been able to pull off shifting core families around, so I don't think that's really out of the question at this point. There's just a lot of weaknesses that need to be strengthened up. Carly. Harley is a strong character. Cassie is not. Jeffrey, I could take him or leave him, but there is a strong Jeffrey Reva following. At least there seems to be from what I see. So it would work. But I agree that it's time to stop breaking up and making up the main couple. It's time for the kids to go through all that stuff. And they have a potential slew of kids out there. I mean, you've got Josh and Reva's kids, you've got Harley's kids, you've got Rick's kids, you've got Vanessa's young daughter, and you've got Blake's kids. You've got a whole generation of people that have the historical names, Marler, Bauer, Lewis, that Chamberlain, Reardon, that will just, you know, carry the show forward. And I don't, you know, I hate to say this because I don't do this, and I know Jamie has dabbled in it, but it can't be that – it's not that hard, is it, to just have a vision?
I don't know if it's that hard.
You know, carry it forward.
I don't know if it's that hard, but if I had 6 months to turn this soap around, it would need to become appointment television. There is way too much time wasted on people staring out of windows and crap. This stuff with Olivia running around has got to stop. There have got to start being moments in this show when you're watching that you are honestly surprised at what you're seeing, so that it makes you tune in and say, wow, I really enjoyed that moment. I'm going to tune in again tomorrow because there's the possibility that I might have another moment like the one I just experienced. It has been so long since we've had that on this show. Josh and Reva would need to be back together within 6 months, without question. Blake needs to be a terror on heels, no question about it. Harley needs to get off her freaking whining ass and do something about her life instead of having this giant pity party. And I don't care how it happens, Harley needs to become a strong woman again. If that means putting her up against Reva, so be it. Lizzie is being wasted. Here you have who could put character and an actress who is extremely popular that you could take and you could turn into a bitch on heels as well. And instead, we're getting this lovesick thing that, I mean, it's great that she's having a romance and I am all for busy, but she's rolling over. Alan, wasted. Alexandra, wasted. Coop and Ashley are great, and it's good to have those type of characters, so I don't know that I would mess with them specifically. But you've got to start taking and doing something for this show to make it something that people will tune in again for. And I know this is going to sound like heresy, and Guiding Light fans are going to kill me for saying it. But you know what? At this point, with this show being as slow as it is and having as little impact as it is, who knew that Wednesday Inside the Light episodes would be something that a person could look back on fondly? They've got to start doing something.
Not me.
They've got to start doing something to be able to make this appointment television. And they're not doing anything. This is the dreariest, most depressing show that you could have in terms of the way it's being written. And I just want to have little moments that you can appreciate. You go over to As the World Turns, the sister soap, and there are little moments taking place each and every day in the writing that that show is being given. And what I'm saying about Guiding Light has absolutely nothing to do with the quality of actors. I'm talking specifically about writing. Almost every day, there is a moment when you are watching As the World Turns that you think, wow, that was fun. Oh, great. I appreciate that they gave us that little nod. That was a great scene because it's about time that such and such happened. Almost every day you get that on As the World Turns. You get that on some of the other soaps that are recovering. I mean, that can happen sometimes on Bold and the Beautiful as well. Some of the better written soaps right now, As the World Turns, Bold and the Beautiful, One Life to Live, those soaps give you individual moments on a daily basis that hook you so that you want to come back the next day. And that is what Guiding Light has got to start doing, because unless it does, they're going to keep losing viewers left and right, in my mind. And it's all about the writing. They've tried everything else. They've got the cast. They've got the freaking production model that allows them to do it affordably and keep them on the air. The writing has got to change now. Sorry. Pissed.
Yeah, that was really well said. That was good. I mean, you hit all the points.
I would probably be able to suspend. I'd be able to suspend the horrible production model because it's horrible. It's horrible. I don't care. It doesn't look like Laguna Beach. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like Imaginary Bitches. It doesn't even look like my uncle's home movies. It's horrible. But I would be able to suspend that if the writing was good.
And that's the thing. All we're asking for is good writing. It is not too much to ask when you have that talented of a cast for good writing. Days of Our Lives has
James Riley.
Days of Our Lives has
they
more.
Can bring James Riley on.
Ugh. That's just.
I'm sorry. I'd rather see demon possessed people and characters talking to themselves than Harley paying her bills set to Enya or whoever that is yelping in the background.
Well, Hogan Shepherd's out of work. Hogan Shepherd's out of work, so you know, he did wonders for As the World Turns, you know, and he's really good with, you know, that kind of family-oriented, homespun type of thing, so maybe he could make that work. But you mentioned Lizzie, and I didn't think about it, but Lizzie and Dinah could go after each other trying to get Spalding. I mean, even that would be interesting.
Well,
something simple like that.
When it comes to this show, something has got to change. And the only thing that there is left to change that they have not tried is the writing. And I do not understand how you can take and have two sister soaps which are basically, for all intents and purposes, using the exact same production models, because As the World Turns is doing more and more outdoor scenes with each passing day, and you can have As the World Turns be doing this right, and Guiding Light be doing it wrong. And so what it comes down to is the writing. That's all it is, plain and simple.
And writing gets you ratings, rating gets you advertising revenue, revenue gets you money, and money gets you, what, better production.
Yeah.
It's all a
watching
big circle.
Alan fry eggs, literally fry eggs, is not what people tune in to watch.
it's not a story.
No, it's...
Set to elevator music.
They have traded writing, quality writing, for visual crutches like frying eggs and bacon. It's serious. I'm not joking. It's true. Everything.
Oh no, I know. It's really sad, you know.
Well, let's. Another thing that's sad, and I'm going to use this as a terrible segue. And that it was the death of a former Guiding Light and another world star. Jay, you know of this actress much more than I do. I'm not going to even pretend to act like I do. I had never heard of her until she died, and then I found out that she was one of the daytime's biggest stars. Go figure. So, Jay, please give her the credit she is due, since I am unable to do so with a good segue.
Daytime is mourning the loss of Beverly McKenzie, who... For newer soap fans who might not know, she was the grand dame of the industry for practically two decades. She was the original Iris Corey Carrington Wheeler on Another World, paired up against Victoria Wyndham's Rachel Corey in probably one of the best triangles in daytime that didn't involve two people fighting for the same man romantically. Iris was fighting Rachel for the love of her father, McKenzie Corey. That storyline was legendary for Another World. It was produced by Paul Rauch, and it was written by Harding Pete LeMay, who is a genius of the industry. And it shot Another World into international acclaim, and the soap was basically number one for most of the 70s on the strength of Beverly McKenzie versus Victoria Wyndham as Iris and Rachel. The show even went to 90 minutes for a time. Can you imagine 90 minutes of a soap now? Based on the popularity of these characters, she left for her own spinoff, Texas, in the early 80s, and that was short-lived. And then she went on to Guiding Light, where she played the original Alexandra Spaulding. And a legendary role for her. She basically played the role, and her leaving the industry at the time made all the soap headlines because she went off on vacation and used the out in her contract never to return. But this is all of what I know from being a voracious reader of every soap magazine ever, but I really didn't have a visual history of her until I started watching Guiding Light. But growing up, my grandparents adored this character. I never knew her name at the back then, but whenever Carmen Duncan came on as Iris in the late 80s, I was a big fan of her, and we all were, you know, my grandparents grudgingly became fans of hers because all I ever heard was, yeah, this Iris is okay, but that other Iris didn't play. Or, you know, it was just, you knew that whoever this other Iris was that they spoke of could tear up somebody. You know, whenever Iris would go after somebody, Carmen Duncan's version, you know, my grandfather would be like, yeah, that other Iris would have told Paulina how it was. So I just knew that whoever this other Iris was something to be dealt with. But then when the news of Santa Barbara possibly being canceled started making the waves, I started sampling other soaps, and my aunt had watched Guiding Light for years, so I was familiar with Alexandra and Alan Michael, who was played by Rick Hurst then, and I always liked them. You know, she was his aunt, but they were like best friends, and they schemed together and connived, and they were just this great soap duo, and... you know, then when I started watching the show, she was basically trying to keep Nick and Mindy, Vincent Irizarry and Kimberly Sims, who was the show's it couple at the time, trying to keep them apart, and she was scheming and conniving and just awesome. And then she quit. She quit, and that was, you know, now today we have the Can Anybody Replace Martha Byrne and things like that that we're hearing a lot of, but it was thought that it was going to be impossible to replace her as Alexandra Spaulding. And kudos to Marge Doucet, who did a great job of doing so. But for, you know, for most Guiding Light fans, there is no one else but Beverly McKenzie in that role. She passed away May 2nd. Great, great loss to daytime. Looking back at all those YouTube clips just made me sad for the loss of a great actress and for the loss of a great industry. I mean, well, we definitely have flickers of light with One Life to Live right now and The Bold and the Beautiful, but it's just, soaps are just not what they used to be. I mean, we really need to start, instead of sending casting directors out to malls to, or whatever, to try to get them on intern or this and that, we need to start hitting up some theater schools again, or some, you know, some off-Broadway plays, because this lady, from what I've read, she came from the theater, and that's, you know, that's where most of the best soap actors came from. I mean, the Luke and Laura years started the fresh face, young people coming in, and that definitely has its part. We need to have the young, beautiful people, but we need to have some established, strong actors and actresses in daytime. And kudos to her for being that for so many years.
Mike, do you remember her?
I have vague memories of her. Like Jay, I read most of what I know. I did see her briefly as Iris, but at the time in the early 80s, she had already moved over to Texas, and I didn't watch that show. It was only on, I think, for two years, and then she was over as Alexandra. So it's bits and pieces, but she's legendary. I mean, anything that I've ever read about her, nothing ever has been bad. She was definitely a soap goddess, and I just think it's the end of an era, truly, to, you know, for the soap world.
Well, I'm going to use a really bad segue out of that. When one era ends, another keeps returning. Michael Damian is returning to Young and the Restless once again. Any thoughts on Young and the Restless this last week?
Well, it seems like they're on the verge of things happening, but it just doesn't seem to be going anywhere. We have Victoria and Adam in a power play, but neither actor, and I'm not, this isn't a slam against the actor, but I think it would be better if there was a little bit more intensity and rivalry between the two. They just seem to be reading their lines and feeling badly, and I would love to see Victoria kind of rise up and gain her strength so Adam doesn't feel so superior. I know Victor is completely out of the loop because he just doesn't even want to be bothered. Phyllis and Sharon seem to be heating up somewhat. Jill and Nikki are on the verge of some kind of rivalry, but there just really is not going anywhere. So I think the stuff is there, but it's just not coming to a boil very quickly. That's
Jay,
all.
Any thoughts?
What do you think, Jamie?
Mike's hitting it on the head here. Unlike Guiding Light, this is the other, like Guiding Light, this is the other soap that it's painful for me to watch, and that is crazy for me, having watched this show for 30 years. But unlike Guiding Light, I'm enjoying the stories. It all looks like it would be great drama, you know, from what's written down on a page. You know, Victor screwing his daughter's best friend, and then this skeevy new son showing up in town. But the actors that are playing these parts, these very integral parts to this storyline, just aren't working for me. Sabrina doesn't work for me. I didn't want to judge him too quickly, but it's time now that I can say it. Adam's not working for me, and we all know Amelia Hindley has never, ever worked for me as Victoria Newman. I'm not going to do the whole Heather Tom dance anymore because she's doing good work at Bold and the Beautiful, but they need to get me a strong Victoria Newman in here. This whimpering, wilting flower cannot be Victoria. This is not what the character was ever envisioned to be. She is fierce. She is her father's daughter. She's more Victor than Nicholas ever was. And this actress is not bringing that for me. I'm sorry, I'd rather see someone like Sarah Brown or Gina Tognoni or just someone with some backbone, Rebecca Budig.
Would you quit poaching names off of my favorite characters off of other soaps?
I'm sorry, but I need a Victoria who can bring it. I need an Adam. Chad Brandon.
I would even like to see Victoria slam Victor's butt into the wall. I mean, I'd like her to stand up to Victor. She's not even standing up to Victor.
I wanted to ask you.
They need to recast Sabrina with an actress who's got some real conniving sexual qualities. There's no chemistry between them. There's no chemistry between Nikki and Vincent Irizarry. Two great actors, but they don't have any chemistry together. There's just no.
Here's one for you. Let's have Sarah Buxton come back as Victor's love interest. Now that would be something.
Hey. I think she'd be great, you know, especially if they brought her in the same kind of way, you know, as someone who was, you know, came into buddy-buddy with Victoria and then, you know, because she would be great. Can you picture her up against Nikki in a conniving scene? This poor girl that they got now, whenever Melody Thomas-Scott decides that she doesn't, you know, or that Nikki decides that she doesn't like this one, it's over for her. She's going to snap her neck like a twig in a scene. I mean... No,
I actually thought Adam. Both of them have. No, it's not. And I actually thought that for a short time, since they were both in New York at the same time, that Adam had conspired to bring Sabrina to Victor, and that his plan was working. But I see them talking to each other in a way that they wouldn't be talking in private, right?
Picture Lisa Peluso
from Another World.
Oh, she's
picture
awesome.
Lisa Peluso as Sabrina and Chad Brandon, who played
Xander.
What was his name on GH, Luke? Xander as Victor Jr. Picture two actors like that mixing it in with the already established Newmans. I mean, it would be.
I liked
electric.
Her. I remember her from Search for Tomorrow.
Picture Aaron Torpy in the role of Heather. Although now that Belle Bloom has this Emmy nod, I don't know if we'll ever.
Which
get
doesn't
rid
say
of
much
her.
For.
Oh,
okay.
We'll never get rid of him now. Her or Colleen. We'll never get rid of him now. Dear God in heaven, I don't know if I can take much more. I mean, okay, you know, I just can't take much more of this. You know, who, what were they smoking and where can I get some cheap? I'm sorry, I'm not actor bashing, I'm calling a spade a spade. I'm not an actor. I don't profess to be one, but I can tell when someone can or cannot act. And, you know, the only one of those girls that were nominated that can act is the girl that plays Jana. She can act. I felt bad in grouping her into the whole, you know, she can act, but her character's just pointless. She's a killer 1 minute, and then she's a kooky hippie 1 minute, like Phoebe from Friends. But she can act. I'll give her that. But the other two, no. No, no. No.
That's not
no,
bad for somebody who isn't going to fly off the cuff tonight.
I'm sorry. I'm never. Well, I just shot my whole. You know, and Luke, you can fully publish everything I've said. I'll never get to work for God and Light or Young and the Restless. I don't care. I just have to be honest here. They've got to do something with God and Light's writings, and they've got to get those, as Nelson calls them, hair models off my TV screen. I will take Gloria over them any day. Now you know they can bring Sam from GH over. And I will take her over that mess, get the Emmy nomination. It's just wrong. And did I read that Beverly McKenzie never won the Emmy? And now you've got these vapid little things getting the Emmy nomination. It doesn't make sense, and it's just not right. It's not right. It's not okay.
Wow, I don't think I've ever heard you go off on a bender like that before.
These nominations have brought it out in me.
And
I'm sorry.
As well, they should. You know, I mean, what took place with the Emmy nominations, plain and simple, was an atrocity.
You know, daytime has sustained us through divorces, deaths in our families, chicken pox for so many years, and it's in danger of dying. And we've got people putting out this kind of horse mess.
Well, and there's a reason. I mean, I didn't mention this in our Emmy discussion podcast, but there is a reason why daytime is looked down upon by the rest of the other industries. When you have this type of crap happening, it only solidifies the stereotypes that film and primetime television stars and the industries have against daytime. Because when you have
Well, see, they've always.
I know, but what I'm saying is when you take and you compare the nominations for the primetime Emmys, a lot of times, yes, there may be shows that have been in there for years and years and years, like The Sopranos. But usually you're being thrown a bone, and usually in terms of other shows being added in or other stars being added in, and usually it makes at least a little bit more sense, and it at least seems legitimate. When you have the same thing take place...
And those shows are
exactly,
at least popular.
Exactly, and then you have...
You know, at least that you could say, okay...
Then you have the Golden Globes and the Oscar nominations. The people who win an Oscar deserve a freaking Oscar. The five candidates who make it into the final five positions for an Oscar nomination deserve those, almost always, with very few rare exceptions. Then you look at the Daytime Emmy Awards, and you see what's happening, and the fact that there are so many accusations of block voting taking place, and how it's being done, and nominations that are being made that make absolutely no sense. I do not think that there is the two actresses Jay mentioned have 2 hours worth of quality stuff to be able to have been submitted for an Emmy nomination. There isn't. Anybody who's been watching this show for the last year knows that neither of those two actresses have 2 hours worth at all. And I'm not actor bashing. I'm just saying the characters, what we saw on our screens, there is nothing there.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't watch.
I would say that the people that vote for them have to sit there and watch the 2 hours of every one of them. And then they'll see what they voted for.
This is what's got to happen. They have got to stop this block voting crap. They've got to. It has to become anonymous. You should not have to confer with your executive producer or your network. It should be anonymous. They should not be allowed to send out, "Hey, this is who we think should win" type crap, which is allegedly what's done. They should not be allowed to do that. Or they should do it all they want, but the voting should be done anonymously, so that these people can feel free to vote for people on other networks who are more deserving, instead of being told to vote in-house. Because this is what you get, and it's a big old ball of horse mess. When you don't have Kirsten Storms on a Younger Actress Emmy nomination after the great work she did after Georgie's death, and after the great work she does every day compared to Vail Bloom and Tamin Sersak, I'm sorry. Every young adult actress on ABC Daytime should have been on that list before those three girls from Young
Adults. Well,
just wrong. Farrah Fath held her own with Erica Slezak.
In defense of the actress who portrayed Jana, if she submitted some of that stuff surrounding her tumor or surrounding the whole, my God, I cannot believe we're even going back to it, but the Bradley Thunder Thighs era of
You're going to say it, aren't you?
Oh, what is the hell that thing, that awful, atrocious thing was? The reliquary. She actually had some scenes, and I mean, at least she had. I mean, I know for a fact she had at least 2 hours worth of stuff. The other two did not at all.
And Tamin Sersak is not a bad actress. She's just wrong for Colleen. But Vail Bloom is not a strong enough actress to even be nominated. It's laughable, you know. And it breaks my heart to say this because as a writer. Wannabe writer, criticism is so hard to take, but I mean, it's just real. I mean, if we didn't want to be criticized, we'd go work at a tire factory every day. That young lady needs a lot more work as an actress to be on an Emmy nomination list. This is not a slam of her. Actor bashing is if I said she had boogers in her nose. No, I'm not actor bashing. I'm just being realistic. She is not a strong actor, and it is.
She had no storyline.
Here's the other point.
She had no story.
I think that all three of us would be willing to agree that when a new actor comes on a show who does not have very much acting experience, which is often the case with younger actor in the younger actor categories, that we are all willing to give them the benefit of the doubt for a couple years to be able to watch these people grow into these roles and to get their footing. Josh Duhamel was horrible, horrible when he first started on All My Children, and he ended up great.
Luke, your girl, Chrishell Strauss, you know, we used to argue back and forth. This was back before I was blogging. It was painful for me to watch her first 6 months on the show. She's great now.
Well, no, but,
so I'm not saying Belle Bloom won't be great eventually.
But that's what I'm saying. These actresses should not be getting nominations when they've been on for less than a year and have absolutely nothing for it to show for it. If this was 3 years from now.
Unless they brought it during their first year. Now, sometimes you have people who bring it, like Bethany Joy Lenz, when she played Michelle Bauer, she brought it. First year out the gate, she deserved all the kudos she got. But usually, you're right. It takes somebody a good 2 to 3. Anne Hesh, who is my favorite actor of all time, was laughable her first couple of months as Vicky and Marley. It takes people time a lot. That's why they say daytime is the best training ground. But they make it laughable when they, you know, give these people Emmys over people who really deserve them. You know, and it's not just this best younger lead actress. Let's go on up to best lead actress. With Nicole Forrester. I mean, that is a shame before God that Catherine Kelly Lang is not on this list, and you got Nicole Forrester on there.
We have been running for 55 minutes, and this show is supposed to be 30 minutes, but we're having a great time at it. What do you guys think of Days of Our Lives this last week? I thought it was really interesting where Sammy and EJ and everybody and John are going in to talk to the immigration guy. John goes in and talks to him, and he basically says, I don't think these two young people realize how much they're actually in love with each other. When he left, Sammy goes, what did you tell him? And he played really coy, and he just said, well, I told him the truth. And I like the foreshadowing that's going on there because there was some great stuff in there. Then Nicole showed up. Nicole goes, and she asked the question that almost every single Days of Our Lives fan has to be asking. And I know they've explained it before, but they explained it again. How in the world is it that EJ, who was born in the United States, didn't have a U.S. citizenship or have U.S. citizenship? And so EJ went through the long story, and afterwards Nicole just looked at me and she says, can I have a drink? Someone needs one after that. I mean, it's like, thank you, Days of Our Lives, for nodding to the fact that you are writing this story. It makes no sense, but at least you're willing to recognize the fact that it makes no sense and give a nod to us, the viewers, which is why I go back to the whole thing about Guiding Light. That little moment on Days of Our Lives made that episode and that day worth watching and made it possible for me to want to tune in again. That type of moment is what Guiding Light needs and hasn't had in 6 months.
You're right. If Gina Tognoni, if they cut to her slapping the cameraman in the back of the head saying, what's the matter with you? Are you drunk? I'd love it.
I was going to say, I have a little bit of an issue with Chelsea not being able to have children. Not that that will ever be reversed someday, but I think it's more the fact that she's a core character. She's daughter of Bo and Billy. And just to have her cut short like that as a young adult, I mean, I wouldn't want to see her reproduce because I don't really like her. But I just think that you're cutting your – you know what I mean? We talk about the whole generational thing. And you've just taken this character who is a daughter of somebody who's been on for decades, and you've just said that she can't have children. So, I mean, what's the point?
Oh, Mike, never fear. That girl clawed her way out after Billy buried her in a swamp. She better claw her way back up. So I figure she'll figure out a way to reproduce.
Maybe this show is full of magic sperm too, and Daniel will you know, just magically, you know, impregnate her or something.
Yep, because that's who she wants to impregnate her. It sure ain't Nick anymore.
That's the truth. We had some comments about last week's topic of Robo John, and I wanted to read a couple of those real quick. Carolina Girl writes, "Great podcast as always, guys. I just want to say that I want to that how much I agree with Jamie about his comments about the new Robo John and how this can possibly revitalize John and Marlena as patriarchs of the show. Seeing John and Marlena as what they can be if given a good storyline gives me hope that this new storyline or with this new storyline we can fall in love with John and Marlena all over again." Longtime listener, come with me. Wrote, "I absolutely, fully, 100% agree with you. I don't need John and Marlena lovey-dovey and together, and I don't think most John and Marlena fans want that either. What I need is that they are written in character, guided towards each other in a good story. As for hitting the sheets, they already did, and it was cut after a cover storyline about it in Digest, in interviews with the actors and everything. We know they had sex, and what you said actually happened, only the other way around. Marlena was hopeful, but as soon as she realized what she'd done, she wasn't so hopeful or happy anymore. John, however, became more attached to Marlena. Instead of feeling like, well, I've done her now, time for me to get someone else, he just wanted her more. I like their little push and pull. Marlena is being the scared one, and John is being so honest about what he wants. That's in character for him. He always wanted Marlena, no matter who he was or who he was with. It's just different. What irks me about this story is, like you all said, the lack of nuance. I mean, the scenes in the restaurant were the exception, and that was all about the actors, in my opinion. I need to see progress. I need for history to be respected and shown accurately." I don't know what can be added to that. I mean, John and Marlena, I mean, I'm enjoying them. I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm enjoying them. But there's a couple other things that were of hot topics this last week on DaytimeConfidential.com. One of them was the fact that The Globe is reporting that Joe Mescalo has been allegedly fired from Days of Our Lives. And allegedly, he was basically just called up and said, "Hey, we're letting you go." And he was not given any type of exit storyline, any type of whatever. The loss of Stefano, to me, at this time, is not something that I necessarily would like to see have happening at Days of Our Lives. So it has me concerned, but what are your guys' impressions on the story, if it were to end up being true?
I'll go first, because Jamie has a longer history with the show. I really have never felt any Stefano love, because I have just seen him with this past return that he had. I'm really okay if right now at this point with the way the show is being written that he is out of the picture. I also think that his penance of having himself be in an eternal coma at the hands of Marlena, even though he can see and hear everything, is kind of just dessert. So for me, I'm okay with it. Obviously, if he was fired the way he was fired, that's wrong, but it seems to be becoming more and more common. So that's my opinion.
Jay, what do you think?
Here's my honest-to-God take on it. I love Joe Mescalo. Stefano is one of my favorite characters, but only when he's written right. I'm not grouping what Dina is doing today is right now because it's awesome, but in the last 4 to 5 years, Days has brought back almost all of my favorite couples and characters, Jack and Jennifer, Patch and Kayla, Frankie, all these people, but they just didn't use them right to where long-term fans were shaking our heads and newer fans were like, what was so great about these people? So that's what happened with Stefano. They brought him back. They didn't pair him back up. They didn't pit him against John, which that's Days' greatest super couple, John versus Stefano for Marlena. They didn't do any of that. They did kind of do it really good with having Marlena be the one. I loved Marlena being the one to take him out and neutralize him. But I'm enjoying Dina's vision of Days, and I really would love to see Joe back at Bold and the Beautiful, where he was utilized much more realistically, and Massimo was a lot of what Stefano used to be in the 80s without all the cartoonish, over outlandish stuff. So I'd love for him to go back to Bold and the Beautiful. This is my fear, though, because he has a great, enormous fan base. And in recent years on soaps, when a vet is let go, even if they weren't being used, it causes horrible, bad PR for the soap. And Days does not need that right now. I almost wish they could find a pot of money just to pay their vets so that they don't get rid of any more vets, because there's nothing like, I mean, GH is point in case. I love GH right now. It's great. It's been great to me for years, but people are pissed off because they get rid of their vets in a less than stellar fashion. So I'm hoping it's not true, because Days does not need any fans to tune out because of bad PR. They won't notice. They won't really. Fans are not always logical. So the fact that Stefano is not on our screens won't matter. But if they read that their favorite actor was booted out or shown the door, and again, people, this is a business. This is not. I kind of cringe when, you know, because I'm not the sentimental type. I love my actors and actresses, but these soaps are a business, and you can't pay a lot of people the salaries they made in the 80s and 90s when these shows are not making what they made. And the longer you've been on a soap, the more money you get guaranteed. So I kind of feel their pain sometimes, you know, because it's fans are going to be outraged every time. But, you know, Days is in danger, so they have to – and they're bringing on all these new people, so they got to get the money somewhere.
Let's discuss a poll that you put up on the blog real quick. We'll discuss it in brief, but basically the whole topic of EJ and Sammy versus Lumi.
Conversation
degenerated real fast. I'm not sure what to say. This is not a personal comment on any one, like, poster or member of our sites or anything, because that's not what it is, but more of an observation in how we turn into fan wars. And it, to me, it's really sad when we as fans who enjoy our soap so much, it's one thing to go after the characters and it's one thing to go after the storylines, but at the same time, making personal attacks on other fan bases because you don't agree with them. It's like there was one person, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, but if you just automatically say that because you like E-Jammy, you're pro-rape, that to me is like, huh? To me, that makes absolutely no sense.
It's like saying Luke and Laura fans are pro-rape.
Todd and Blair, or I mean, any number of major popular couples, and there's an evolution that takes place, at least we hope there's an evolution that takes place amongst the characters that we have on our shows. I mean, some of the characters have done atrocious and terrible, terrible things. But it seems to me like, okay, we can debate it back and forth. I mean, I've given Jay a hard time about the fact that, well, basically what Ava did to Steve was the exact same thing, and because I know that he likes both Ava and Patch and Kayla. And I mean, it's good-natured ribbing, but why do we as fans have to take and always go to
attack each other's morality? That's what bothers me, and as a long-term member of some GH message boards, it happens out there every day. It starts with, I love this fan base, or I love that fan base, but before it, you know it, it's you are a nasty stink pig because you like the mob, and how dare you like the mob? Your morality must be, you know, like basically saying that you're out there with a machine gun shooting somebody over coffee beans because you like mobsters on TV. People get so riled up in these fictional shows that, and in this person or in this, in the defense of E-Jammy, rape is so, it's not like the mob. I mean, most of us don't know about the mob, but rape is such a personal thing that I definitely can understand why fans are offended by it. But when I brought up the point that, well, what do you think about Luke and Laura, Daytime's greatest super couple? The person was like, well, you can't even compare that. Yes, you can. I mean, no, I doubt if they'll ever be a couple as popular as Luke and Laura, but the fact remains there's no question about Luke raped Laura on the disco floor. A lot of fans debate what happened with EJ and Sammy. Yes, they call it rape on the show, but a lot of people consider it coercion or blackmail and don't think of it as the same thing that happened to Laura, who went on to fall in love with her rapist to international fame. So that was my point. It's, if you like a couple, it doesn't matter. You know, you'll suspend your disbelief even of the most heinous things. Lucas tried to kill Sammy twice. Would she have rather dealt with what she dealt with EJ, or would she have rather fallen off that cliff and died when Kate and Lucas had the Will baby doll dangling on the cliff for her to fall off? I mean, you can't attack someone else because they like a fan base that you don't. That's just insane.
Well, I wish that we as fans, and I mean it's not going to change, but it would just be nice if we as fans wouldn't take it to that level.
Because it's fiction. At the end of the day, they don't even exist. There is no Lucas. There is no Sammy. They're all
exactly. And
you know,
it's one thing to make honest, critical opinions of things that are taking place on your screen and having a discussion about it. But to start lumping people in and saying, "Oh, you're pro rape," blah 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 blah, that just
yeah. Who is pro rape? I mean, that is the most absurd statement in the world. I'm not dogging our readers, but I mean, is there a group out there, a pro-rape board or something? I mean, I don't even think rapists are pro-rape at the time. I mean, that whole statement, and I just stopped because I know me. I'll have said something Luke will have to delete because that's just absurd to even say that to someone. You're pro-rape.
It's just something. It's,
you know.
Well, just being a soap watcher alone, you put aside any ounce of morality you have about
that's
anything.
True.
You know, I mean, if you are a fan of a couple, are you pro-adultery because they hooked up and they had an affair? If you like Nick and Phyllis on The Young and the Restless, are you a fan of adultery? I don't think so.
If you're a fan
Sam
on
make,
TH, are you a fan of floor sex?
Well, and if you're a fan of Jonathan and Tammy, are you pro incest? If you're a fan of Chad and Vincent on whatever the hell that was, I mean,
oh yeah, right.
No, I mean, it's just we as fans need to learn how to treat each other more respectably when it comes to the discussion of topics. Because I think that we as fans could have a lot of intelligent discussions. And obviously we're going to have our moments of senility. I mean, you guys have listened to me go off on various topics about characters. But at the same time, there's something that has to be said for the fact that we as fans should be trying to at least make rational opinions or have rational opinions.
We all have the same goal.
Yes.
We want to see these shows succeed. You know, mm-hmm. You would think that that would unite us, but you know, these fan bases, and that's a tribute to daytime because you really never see that in primetime or movies. You know, some of the more sci-fi movies and shows have those core fan bases, you know, like the Joss Whedon universe and stuff like that. But soaps are really the only universe where you just see these diehard fan bases rise up that will pelt Allison Sweeney in a grocery store and tell her to leave Carrie alone. You know, you don't
right.
see that with
yeah,
anything
right.
else. Any other genre in entertainment.
Well, let's talk about As the World Turns, because this is a supersized edition of this show. It's running really, really long. It could be three episodes, in fact, almost. But As the World Turns had some moments this week. One of those moments was when Brad found out that he has a daughter. We knew it was coming. I mean, it was obvious that that's where it was headed. But I'm finding it very interesting about how Brad is now having insecurity issues as to whether or not he can measure up as a father the way that Jack and Holden have. And I find that very intriguing, and I find it also intriguing that he went to Henry for advice, and which to me was even yet a more blatant, obvious example of the fact that they are really trying to turn her into Maddie 2.0, though she absolutely has no care in the world for anything. The style of the character seems to be as such. What did you guys think of As the World Turns this week, and did you enjoy the Brad stuff? Or if not, what about As the World Turns did you like or dislike?
I actually like the fact that Brad is showing some maturity and acceptance. The first thing that they did was run to the hospital and get a DNA test, and I know that it can't be done that quickly, but with all the other people that drop in and say, "Hey, I'm your kid," that go like Jade, that go months without a test, and you just accept, I think it was a very realistic thing for Brad to want to do. I actually find that Katie is the one that's become a bigger surprise, in that she's standing by Brad, accepting this girl, and telling Jack to take a hike. She's not wavering on Mike, and she's not wavering on Jack. And that is really what I wanted to see. I wanted to see her stand up for her marriage and just stick with one guy and try to make it work. She told Jackoff the other day that she didn't want to hear anything. I just said Jackoff. I'm sorry.
Oh, boy. Well,
she told her ex-husband off the other day. And she stood her ground and said, I don't want to hear you complaining about Carly anymore. If you have a problem with her, you go talk to her yourself. And that was a moment. You talk about moments. That was a highlight for me, as was the Allison, Chris, Bob, Kim dinner party. That was always fun. And Paul and Sophie, okay, gross me out.
Have
don't
you
want
heard
to
about the fact
together.
That he's going to cry rape?
Meg needs to be stronger.
Supposedly, Sophie's going to cry rape when Paul doesn't return her affections.
Well, I honestly don't care. I hate to say that because I'm really enjoying the show, but I just
what do you think
don't
of,
have any
What do you
use
think
for
of Emily and Casey? Do you think we could be seeing a torrid affair spring up?
God, I
I'm
hope
not
so.
Really sure, but I'm loving
it,
this.
It
new
took
Casey.
Him a while to grow into it, he's but great. He's starting to step up, yeah. And it's a good thing.
I think the character has grown up, and this guy, Billy Magnuson, has just really been able to show a maturity in Casey, and I actually think, and this is where the show is being really good, they're actually mixing up people that are already there. You know, you throw Emily into Casey's orbit and you tick off Tom and Margot. I mean, that's how you do it. I mean, it's something that seems obvious, but, you know.
Jay, what
works.
Do you think?
Love it. Classic soap. What better for the son to hook up with the mistress who broke up the parents at one time and had an illegitimate kid by him? I mean, that has got to stick in Margot's craw if that happens. I mean, that's soaps at its best. That's what are supposed to happen on soaps. The mistress is supposed to bed the son, you know, and Margot and Emily are supposed to reignite their rivalry. And then Kim should get involved in it as, you know, Casey's step-grandmother, and then she can call Susan a slut for sleeping with Bob all those years ago. That's what was always good about the Stewarts versus the Hughes is that, you know, basically each one of the Stewart women screwed with a Hughes marriage. So, I mean, it would be great to see that. You know, I kind of, after they married Emily and Hal, Margot and her mended their fences, and that was good. You know, you always want that moment where the rivals can be lovey-dovey, but then you really want it to heat back up. So there'd be nothing better to heat that up than Emily screwing with Margot's kid.
And it's great to see Margot back. And Emily's done it before. She was screwing around with James when he was married to Barbara. And when James blew her off, she went and slept with Paul. She's been down this road before. It's not out of character for her.
Well, let's
to,
just hope
to
that
do
Casey
something
doesn't
like this,
end up in a
which
freaking
is
bear
actually
trap.
A good thing.
No, see, that's what was out of character for Emily. Whoever decided to just make her go stark raving mad and start killing right. people and keeping them in cabins, it's like, what the hell? Why did Emily become violent all of a sudden?
Well, folks, we hope that you have enjoyed this giant episode of the CBS In Days edition of Daytime Confidential. Be sure to send your emails. I can only imagine what type of emails and comments this episode is going to garner. to podcast at daytimeconfidential.com or comment in the forums at forums.tvfanonline.com or on the blog under the post for this episode. We thank you for listening. We hope that you aren't just screaming at your iPods and throwing them against walls. Until next time, so long, folks.
Bye.
Bye.